You're listening to F1 Debrief, interesting and worrying in equal measure. Coming up on this show, we discuss F1 trademarks, Barcelona testing, and quite a lot about KERS.
But we don't know where we're at with debrief shows now. We don't know what day we record them. We don't know when they're going to be released.
It's all got very mixed up.
It's a Saturday evening, yet we plan to record this show on a Tuesday evening.
Yeah.
What in the world happened?
Well, we were a bit busy and then we ate some food and were too tired.
Right. Tortillas killed F1 debrief.
Yeah.
And then what happened today?
Well, nothing. We're doing it today. We're powering through, even though I cooked a roast chicken, which equally should have been death by chicken, I suppose.
So are you the Michael Caine of Side Podcast?
I could be. I could go and work for Williams.
Brilliant.
Good week, bad week.
It's been a good week for Nick Heidfeld, who was confirmed at Renault as the replacement for Robert Kubica while he continues to recover.
This seems like a long time ago, this news. Are you sure this was this week?
Well, we definitely didn't talk about it in the last show.
Fair enough. It's been a good fortnight.
Yeah. Kubica is doing well. He had his final surgery and he's left intensive care now, so recovery is going according to plan. Meanwhile, Nick Heidfeld and Vitaly Petrov shared testing duties in Barcelona, which we'll talk about in a bit. It's been a bad week for Formula One Group, who are still trying to get F1 as a trademark.
Give it up!
The General Court in Luxembourg said no. Apparently, FOG, which is a brilliant name by the way, FOG, they were seeking trademarks for F1, F1 Formula One, F1 Racing Simulation, F1 Pole Position, and F1 Pit Stop Cafe.
Which tells you everything you need to know about how long this case has been going on. F1 Pit Stop Cafe?
Weird.
Bernie has no hope in getting this to work. I think is it the second highest court in the world he's gone through now, or at least in Europe. There's only one other place he can go with it. What I am interested in about the story, actually, is that it was originally brought by Racing Live, who used to own F1 Live domain. They were protecting their domain name from Bernie. They've since been bought by ESPN. Now, is this court case continuing with the original site using the money that they got from ESPN? Is ESPN taking on the mantle of fighting this? Racing Live don't appear to exist as an entity anymore. So is this just the continuing machinations of the legal process? Or is somebody still fighting their corner for F1? But either way, Bernie has no hope of getting the letters F and the number 1 trademarked because he's got the trademark for Formula 1.
It's been a good week for Bob Bell, who has been confirmed at Mercedes GP as technical director.
That seems like ages ago as well. We have to do more podcasts.
Yes, we do.
More frequently.
Stop eating Mexican food then. He is directly under Ross Brawn, who wants to take a bit more of an overview of the car as a whole. Bob will be based at Brackley and in charge of the chassis design team.
Yay for Bob. We like Bob.
We do. It's been a bad week for fan attendance, as the Chinese Grand Prix will be held at Shanghai for the foreseeable future.
They've
done a new deal to host until 2017, with bosses saying that they'll reduce ticket prices to try and attract more spectators.
They're going to reduce ticket prices from free.
Sounds
that's
like it.
We'll
pay you to come to our race.
That's a hell of an economy they've got in China. What's less than free? Amazing.
News and views.
The first thing that needs mentioning, obviously, is Bahrain. But we don't need to talk about it too much because we did do a special side pod chat podcast all about Bahrain and the fact that it's been cancelled or postponed.
If you haven't listened to it already, please do so. I thought it was a fabulous side pod chat. We must do more of those too.
Yes.
But we did cover an awful lot of subjects there. Anything else to add? Anything we've missed? Has anything changed in the past week?
I don't think so. It's all gone very quiet now. Obviously, everyone is just adjusting their schedules and hoping for the best in Australia.
Who has benefited the most from a Formula One point of view from this race being cancelled? I've heard that McLaren are very pleased that they've got more time to work on their car because they were having troubles.
Yeah.
Which teams are struggling the most and who will benefit? Because obviously Red Bull and Ferrari were looking strong in testing.
HRT probably, because they missed some testing days and stuff. They've probably got some development to do.
They've got some time to find a sponsor.
Yeah. And I suppose the journalists have benefited because they don't have to travel, but some of them are not getting their money back on hotels and things.
That's true. And if the race gets rescheduled, they may be...
It's a bit awkward.
It's going to be a long... It depends when it happens, but if it happens near the end of the season, it's going to be a lot of long-haul races for all journalists and team members.
Yeah.
I'm not too sure that's going to work out, but in the moment, I'm still thinking it's going to be a 19-race season. Are you? Can they possibly slot Bahrain in anywhere else?
Well, Bernie said he wanted to, didn't he? And he has the power to do it.
Here's the thing with Bernie. Bernie has claimed that he took the hit on the cost of shelving the Bahrain race. So I think if we see the race being rescheduled, that will tell you whether or not Bernie lost his money or not. Because if he lost any money, he's going to go to every length to make sure he gets it back. Because I'm that cynical. I'm just a cynic like
well,
that.
Well, all this time you've been saying, well, Bernie hasn't said it because he doesn't want to lose his money. And now it turns out he's lost money. So we'll see how it plays out.
According to Bernie, Bernie has lost money.
Nobody knows the inner workings of Bernie's bank balance.
But we will be able to tell. Although we might soon, due to the upcoming court case. But that's a whole other story. At the moment, we don't know the inner workings of Bernie's bank balance. But we will be able to tell. Because if the race gets slotted in the future, then he will obviously be keen to make his own money back.
We've mentioned court cases a couple of times already this show because that's what F1 is all about at the moment. It's wonderful.
It's the off season. Let's go to court.
There was a bit of an update on something we talked about a while back where we had a rant about the Autosport cover that said the real Lotus is back.
We had a rant about Autosport.
It happens.
Doesn't sound anything like Side Podcast. Why would we do such a thing?
Joe Sayward had something to say on the matter. He wrote in one of his blog posts, if one shows a judge a headline that says the real Lotus is back and you tell him that this is from a reputable journal, he might believe it, even if everyone in the industry knows that the real Lotus is not back at all.
Aha. Now, this is the question we posed on Side Podcast. We said, why would Autosport go out of their way to write a headline like that? I don't for one second think that they were in collusions with Lotus Renault, whatever they're called, for Autosport to be used in evidence in court. It's an interesting take on the situation from Joe. I hadn't thought of that. And I do wonder if that does happen, whether or not, you know, people at Haymarket might question how this headline came to be. Because if Autosport are being taken as a trusted source in court, which normally you would, you know, that wouldn't be a problem because they are a trusted source in F1. On any other news story, not a problem. But on this one, that sounds like a pretty dodgy area to go into, don't you think?
I don't know. It seems odd to me that you can use the cover of a magazine, which is always tabloid headline-ish statements, as proof in court. But I think it's one that we should keep an eye on.
The unknown at the moment is how much the judge will know about the sport and whether or not there will be any implicit knowledge assumed. But time will tell. Again, we will be watching the courts with interest.
Next up, the Barcelona test. Now, again, it was a while ago because this podcast was delayed, so we'll just rattle through it quite quickly. It was a bit wet. I think, is that the first time we've had some proper wet testing, not in Abu Dhabi where they wet the tracks on purpose?
The first natural wet test for Pirelli tyres, is that right? Is that what we're thinking?
Maybe.
And how did people fare? Well, much different?
On the first day, Vettel was fastest. Williams had some troubles again. They're not doing well this pre-season. And Renault had some KERS issues, but no one can ever tell. You can't tell they're having KERS issues. It's just because they hold their hand up and admit it. How would you ever know?
I did spot on the Schuberth blog, there was a picture of, it might have been Nico Rosberg's engineer. He was holding his helmet, but he had to wear the massive KERS gloves that everybody in the paddock now has to, everybody associated with the car now has to wear because of the dangers.
I remember them.
Yes, they're back.
They're so pretty.
With a vengeance. They look ridiculous. They're like big marigold gardening gloves, that kind of thing. So, yes, we don't know if teams have, you know, KERS troubles or any other troubles, but at least we can see when they're running KERS because everybody has to wear these great big
gloves.
Yeah, safety equipment.
So that might be the sign that we were looking for. You know, we were saying it needs to be more obvious. That is quite obvious. Also on the first day, Alguersuari, he was third, which is amazing. Toro Rosso. Who knew they were still there?
They're still going round.
Yeah. On the second day, Alguersuari was second. Amazing.
Interesting. Okay, we can't read anything into those times, but that does... Toro Rosso aren't a team particularly looking for sponsors. So you wouldn't expect them to go for glory runs and to try and pretend to be quick.
No, this
maybe
year...
Maybe they've got a good car.
This year, they're running the Red Bulletin on the side of their car.
That would make sense, I suppose. If you've got brands, why not promote them?
Exactly.
I can't wait for the first Red Bull Crashed Ice sticker to appear
on
the car.
Yeah, that would be brilliant.
That's what you want. That's the kind of synergy the Red Bull should be working towards.
Vettel was fastest on the second day. Liuzzi got to test for Hispania. He's in the running for a drive, we think, although he doesn't have much money.
How did he get on? I didn't see what he was doing. I heard that he had one day?
He had one day. I actually don't know where he came, but he didn't embarrass himself either, so.
Good. Was there a rumour that HRT left the test early, or is that not the case?
They did leave a day before, but I think it was planned.
They just ran out of money.
I don't know.
And they also ran, who's the guy, Mondini? Was it Mondini they ran?
They did. Yeah, that was on the third day.
And that was a paid-for test.
Yeah.
He fancies driving a car, he got some money. We don't think he's going to become a driver. Not an official driver.
I don't think so. But he could. You never know. Stranger things have happened. Rosberg was fastest on the third day. And on the final day, it was Massa at the top. And not only were HRT not there, but Lotus had to go home early because Yano had a crash.
It wasn't Yano's fault.
No.
Make that clear.
Yeah, no. The car had some kind of fault and they didn't have the parts to fix it. So they packed up at about 11 o'clock our time and went home.
Now, I am surprised by this. Why have Lotus struggled so much with parts? Because we discussed on the last podcast how their debut was delayed due to a power steering issue that couldn't be fixed due to lack of parts.
Yeah.
That delayed them by 2 days before they could do full running. And now their test gets shortened due to a lack of parts. Are they running things so stringently and to such a tight schedule that they haven't got time to make these spares? Are they not confident they're going to use these parts, therefore they're only making one of each?
They don't want to waste the money on the parts and they're just crossing their fingers and hoping for the best, I guess.
I just would have assumed in their second year and with a team that seems to know what they're doing and they seem to know where they're going, I just would have thought they would have had more than one of every component. Everything is run to a very narrow margin and there's not too much room for
error.
Crashing. Is what I was going to say. But yes, poor Yano drew the short straw and threw it into the wall. And that sent them home early.
I think that must have put Trulli in a really bad mood because over the next couple of days, he was basically talking about the state of F1, not happy about it.
What did he have to say?
He doesn't like the Pirelli tyres, but then a lot of people have been moaning about that.
Drivers, who cares what they think about tyres? No, really, who did? Seriously, all drivers want are drivers want the best tyres that give them the best feel. And that they can throw around and they can destroy and they don't have to be careful about. Drivers hate nursing tyres and they hate driving carefully. They hate going slowly and bringing them into their window of optimal usage. And they will complain whenever possible. They can, you know, each can have their own problems with them and they can blame them, you know, with impunity and without fear of comeback. Because, you know, one driver might get on fine with a set of tyres and one driver may not. I got the impression that drivers have been told to go easy on Pirelli, and they're all struggling to do that. They're all struggling to hold back on their criticism. What did Trulli go public with?
Well, he mentioned the tyres, but that wasn't what was bugging him mostly. But while we're talking about tyres, when Sam Michael launched the livery of the Williams, which was blue and white, shock horror.
It was a nice blue and white, though. Retro blue and white.
Not really.
Yeah, it was.
Mostly blue and white with a bit more white.
Well, here's the thing. The front end reminded me of the Montoya era Williams, whilst the rear end was sort of like the Rothmans era of Williams. So it was a hybrid of retro liveries. But I like it. Shame about the lighting. Are we going to talk about that in a minute, or shall I just rant about that?
You can talk about it now, but there's no point ranting about it. It's just the same as ever. Why launch something in bad lighting?
What? You can't see it.
I know.
I mean, that was the worst lighting of any launch, surely.
Yeah.
It was like nobody put any money in the meter. They couldn't afford the spotlights, and the car sat there. I mean, it may as well have still had its cover on for what you could see of it. But what I could see, I did like.
So Sam Michael was talking about the tyres, and he said, I'd have to say, from a time period point of view, Pirelli have done a fantastic job. We're comparing them to a very high benchmark, as in Bridgestone. So the progress they've made over the last test has been fantastic. To start with, the tyres were having a lot of wear and degradation, but over the last three tests, you can see they're improving. And then he pointed out three things that were going to make it better. He said, one, Pirelli are working on it all the time. Two, the drivers are learning how to drive around it. And three, the teams are making it better. They're learning how the setup needs to change and adding more downforce and stuff. So by the time we get to the first race, they might have sorted it all out.
So long as the tyres are safe, and so long as they last enough laps to get everybody to the end of the Grand Prix, where is the problem with tyre wear? Where is the problem with drivers struggling with tyres? I mean, if you have to have a three-stop race, have a three-stop race. Well, I don't really see that there's a massive problem with that, and I'm not sure why so many people are concerned about
it. Well, I guess part of it is that with the refueling ban, everyone was in favour of that, was hoping for no pit stops whatsoever. So bringing in tyres that are just going to rack up those pit stops even more, that probably isn't what they want.
I think at the moment it looks like it might sort the men from the boys. You should be able to see a clear pattern between teammates, which driver can look after the tyres and which driver can't. And then also you'll be able to see who's got the designs right and who's got the designs wrong in terms of which tyres, you know, don't, which cars, which chassis don't look after the tyres properly.
I did think it was interesting that Pirelli announced the compounds for the first four races, and they're using the same ones for all four. They're not not varying them at all, which Bridgestone were messing around with the compounds every single time.
Yes, they were very indecisive. I'll tell you what's going to happen. This is my prediction for the start of the season. We're all so interested to see what happens with these tyres. And we've now had the opening race taken away from us, so the season starts later. You can bet every penny you have it's going to rain in the first race. And it'll rain in the second race, and the third race, and the fourth race. We'll get to like the fifth race, and nobody will be any the wiser how the dry tyres operate after four flyaway wet races.
They say a picture speaks a thousand words, and that is just what we were thinking when we launched F1 Big Picture. Rather than pummeling you with text, let the glory of a good F1 photograph illustrate the news. Visit f1bigpicture.com to see the latest image, and while you're there, have a browse around the archives. A good picture never gets old. The final thing we want to mention is not even new news, so even though we're like 2 weeks behind...
Nothing in this show is new news!
Sorry.
Everything's 2 weeks old. What else have you got that's old?
Well, this is actually from like last year. So, yay.
Retro Side Podcast. You know, we have archives for that.
Yeah. I don't know that we've talked about this before. You know, Sauber.
Sauber.
The team.
The team Sauber. Yeah. Yes. I thought you meant Peter for a second, but yes, the team.
Back in the midst of 2010, they launched this thing called Sauber Club One. And basically, it's an umbrella name for anyone that wants to sponsor the team, but doesn't actually want anyone to know they're sponsoring the team.
Secret sponsoring.
Mm.
This doesn't strike me as a particularly smart idea, but I did hear about it when they launched the new car. So they launched the 2011 car and they brought up the subject again.
Yeah, it's funny you should say that because it strikes me as a really smart idea, but just stupid that it even has to happen.
Okay, tell me more about it. Well, what is it?
Sauber Managing Director Manisha Kaltenborn said, "We launched that in the middle of last year because we could sense when we spoke to different companies that they had issues, maybe environmental, which we couldn't really cover with Formula One." So basically, people are embarrassed about the fact that Formula One is...
gas guzzling.
Yeah. And
expensive.
Yeah. And all those things. So they don't necessarily want to have their name plastered all over the car, but they still would like to get some of the benefits that come from sponsoring an F1 team.
And Sauber have solved this conundrum with what?
Sauber Club One.
Which does what? Allows you to sponsor a team without telling anybody you're sponsoring the team.
Yeah, so I think on the side of the car, I think that's the branding, Sauber Club One, and that just means an exclusive club and you'll never know who's in it.
That is ridiculous.
It is weird.
That whole concept, that whole idea, the fact that, what?
It's weird and it doesn't make any sense because the point of sponsorship is that you get public exposure.
For money.
For money.
Right.
So it is...
What do they get if they give Sauber money then? Nothing.
Well, I expect they get all the corporate boxes and...
Right, so they get weekends like away for corporate employees, yeah, and things like that. Okay.
I mean, it does seem weird, but actually it is clever if that's the situation you're in. It's ridiculous that is happening.
Yes.
But I can see that actually that's quite a clever way around it. If you have sponsors that don't want their name on the car,
okay,
do that.
It does sort of, to an extent, explain how Sauber is still in Formula One when they seem to have been running for 18 months without a single sponsor.
Yeah, it saves the problem of having a white car and everyone going, where are you getting your money from?
The clear problem is that you have a sport that companies, brands,
don't want to be
associated
with.
Do not want to be knowingly,
yeah,
associated with it. They're happy to be associated with it, but so long as nobody finds out that they are associated with it.
They're happy to go and use the corporate boxes as long as the public don't find out about it.
Good grief!
It's not a good thing.
It's terrible!
But it's quite sneaky clever.
I can see why they've done what they've done. And it's the kind of thing that might work well for someone like Williams. That too would work. But my goodness me.
Bernie needs to sit up and take note of that.
Somebody needs to think about what's going on behind the scenes and wonder whether or not this is the way Formula One should be going forward. Is it only the problem with the environment, or is it the fact that Formula One is just looks so outlandishly rich? And I mean,
she only mentioned in the environment, but I can imagine that there may be banks and such like.
But this was the case with the fact that Bahrain isn't happening was down to the fact that a large number of people in Bahrain saw Formula One as a bad thing and a thing that had no bearing on their lives because of the amount of income they have and the way that they live their lives. Formula One was frowned upon and also potentially made it a target. So you have, I guess, a problem from all sides that companies don't think Formula One is great to be involved with. But actually, it's quite good for their employees to have a weekend out. I'm stunned. But we need to look into Sauber Club One or Sauber One Club?
Sauber Club One.
Sauber Club One. Must look more into that. Interesting. And worrying in equal measure.
Feedback.
Good afternoon, Side Podcast. This is IT Guy. I've been meaning to call you guys for ages, but just haven't been able to get the time together. But after your last show, which I absolutely loved, by the way, was brilliant. Mr. C, I agree with you. The rules are too complicated. My wife, Mrs. IT Guy, used to watch with me all the time. And after Eddie Irvine and Ralf Schumacher left the scene, the two cutest and most entertaining Formula One drivers, in her opinion, she just couldn't keep up with the rule changes and all the rest of that. So I completely agree with you in that respect. Anyway, just a short message. Just want to say I do love the show very, very much. I love your comments section. I love the atmosphere that you guys have created there, that you're free to make comments and free to throw out ideas, and no one sort of bashes anybody else for saying something. And you don't have to be an absolute expert in Formula One just to participate.
IT Guy, somebody else who's been foiled by food.
What? Obviously,
meaning to call us for ages? Been delayed, clearly, by tortillas.
You just assume
who
that...
isn't?
It's like the fajitas are after everyone.
That's what it is. Yeah. They're delaying everything to do with Side Podcast.
It's interesting what he said about...
the fact that he agreed with me?
Yeah.
You're surprised?
No. His wife not following anymore and all that stuff. Because one of the other things that Trilly said, Trilly, the font of all knowledge...
Who knew?
When he was having his rant, he said... A spectator can't always be chasing the changing regulations like refueling, number of pit stops, F duct and KERS. Can a spectator get passionate about KERS? People at home want to understand, and if we carry on changing the regulations every year, we are just creating confusion. And, you know, for once I agree with him.
That's true. The cynic inside of me says that Trulli is probably confused by the rules and regulations.
He just doesn't like KERS himself.
I think he's probably looking at scratching his head thinking, it wasn't like that one I started.
Too many buttons.
But I cannot disagree with what he's saying. Fair points all, IT Guy and Trulli.
Yeah. and you, I guess.
And me for being right. Yeah. It's too complicated and we don't have to dumb it down, but we have to stop fiddling.
Excellent. Voicemail. If you would like to hear your dulcet tones on the podcast.
Is that our only voicemail of the week?
It is. Yeah, we need more. The number is 012128TRACK. That's 012128872225. Or you can find us on Skype under the username SidePodcast. Or you could send me an MP3 directly to christine@sidepodcast.com. The options are endless.
Much appreciate all of your contributions, be they in audio or in via text or via any other means.
Via text. Not via mobile.
No, not via text, via the written words.
Also, the email or the contact form, which is at sidepodcast.com/about, because you still haven't moved it yet.
You know you're going to be... How long are you going to keep
reminding
people?
I'm going to say
people,
it every time.
But I'm not planning to move it for about 4 months. Do you need to know that?
That's not my problem.
Every single show?
Yep.
Goodness me. Fine.
We do have lots of texts, as you call them.
I didn't mean to call them texts.
This is from Scott. He said, I noticed in your last podcast you mentioned the fastest time of every day of practice, except when Schumacher was first. In fact, the only time you mentioned him was when it was possible that he could have gotten crushed with last year's car design in a crash. I am reasonably new to F1, so I don't know his full history. Was he really that much of a beep? I'm putting a self-imposed beep in there.
Right, as asterisk. That much of an asterisk?
As you Brits put it. Well, we don't like to talk about Schumacher too much, but I must say, I didn't deliberately leave him out. He was written on my show notes. It's just the way we ramble, things get missed out.
That was an oversight on my part because
and then compounded by the fact we talked about him crashing.
No, it wasn't intentional. I've actually mellowed slightly.
Oh my god.
On my...
Hell has frozen over.
Yes. I mean, I don't for one second forgive him for what he did in all of those instances.
Which time?
But at the same time,
You don't care anymore.
I don't care anymore. The fact that he had such a terrible season just made me so happy that it doesn't really, you know, it hasn't balanced out completely.
While he's stuck there in the middle, you don't mind him at all, really. You can just bootle around.
Whilst he's being beaten by Nico Rosberg, I don't give a stuff.
This one is from Guy M and also refers to KERS. He said, in the podcast, you and Mr. C have spoken a lot about how there needs to be an indicator for fans about when KERS is being used. so we can tell if it's being used as a push-to-pass or defensively. KERS is not a push-to-pass like in IndyCar. It's not meant to be a competitive enhancement or to provide passing power. It's a matter of the philosophy of F1 to innovate. KERS is a system that recovers energy. The future of F1 will be in its ability to innovate and stay relevant. Right now, there is little innovation that is relevant. We won't be seeing double diffusers on road cars. However, if Bernie's gambit pays off, we may see KERS technology in our cars much as we see ABS, hydraulic dampers, and aero styling advances from the F1 past. That's why we don't need to see when KERS is being used any more than we need to see a light when the wings are providing downforce through a turn. I love your show and look forward to listening. Guy. It says, P.S. Christine, please post a new picture in your profile page about the show and smile this time. No, I don't do smiling.
Which picture? Is that on Facebook or on the about page? Or
I think it's on sidepodcast.com/about.
You do what? Moody quite well, though.
Yeah, I don't do smiling. That is a good point, I suppose. Maybe we don't need to know when they're pushing KERS or not.
Well, if there was a single supplier of KERS, you could argue that we don't need to know. In the same way that there's a single supplier of the electronic control unit, and we don't really care about how those work, unless anything goes wrong, you could have a point with the KERS. It just is there and it just is working. My objection to that would only be the fact that we still know it's not as efficient as it could be. And I would like it to be competitive. One thing you thought of after the last show and didn't have the intelligence and foresight to say in the show, and I can tell it's already fallen out of your head again for this show.
I said something intelligent.
You said something intelligent after the show, which sounds typical Christine. You mentioned that in the ROC, we watched the Race of Champions briefly, the one of the cars, I forget which one it was, had a number in the rear window, highlighting how many push-to-passes were remaining.
It was like a big five, and it went down every time they pushed it.
An LED display. It was perfect. So I cannot see why you cannot have a large number on the rear of a Formula One car. I can see what they do in other sports.
That would make the liveries look much better. But I think we discussed this last time as well.
Okay.
Colours and lights and things. Mm. But it's another point of view.
The thing is, I forget who.
Guy.
Who, Guy. Not IT Guy, just Guy.
Yeah.
I do mostly agree with that opinion, but I don't know whether or not it couldn't also be a competitive thing. Well, I'll tell you what, given the concept that competition improves the breed in everything, it doesn't matter what it is, given that truism, KERS as a competitive device is more likely to improve KERS by being open and competitive and letting us know what's going on. If we suddenly started picking on one team who had a really rubbish KERS system, they would do their best to make sure they fix that. If KERS is hidden and out of the way, we might be blaming their drivers or whatever for being slow and rubbish. And that would be a shame.
Next up, this is from Chris G, who has a myriad of points to make. REF1D brief, they moved on. I love the yellow
Pirelli. Was that the last one?
That was the last one, okay. Yeah. I love the yellow Pirelli logo. It looks really good with the Ferrari and the Renault. So that's two cars.
And the Lotus, surely.
On the subject of on-track signals for the fans, they should have a whole slew of light signals on the cars, a la Le Mans, first, second, third. I would love to see the cars have a charge-discharge stripe on the side of the car that fills up when KERS charges and empties as it's used. Also, I think at least a quarter of the tyre should be colour-coded in big, bright colours, and the tyre should have an underlayer of colour that shows a tyre is completely worn.
Ooh, yes, black, I like that idea.
Black for super soft, red for soft, green for hard, yellow for inters, safety orange for wet, luminous glow-in-the-dark yellow for black light racing.
I'm going to be sick.
It's a lot of colours to remember.
It's sounding a bit like Mario Kart Rainbow Island. Actually, that's very, very worrying when cars are at speed. Anything else?
Ban two-way radio traffic, pit boards from the pit and driver can say whatever he wants and either thinks for himself or has to go round to get the response from the pit board. And no in-car signals on the dash. Great for patrons in the grandstand. I'm not paying €70 for a kangaroo. I can stay home and watch TV.
Oh, but have you seen the new kangaroo? Chris, you've got your priorities all wrong. Okay, firstly, if you ban pit-to-car radio, you may as well fire Rob. So that's not going to fly.
That's not happening.
You've really not thought that through there, Chris. Open it up so the fans can hear it more. Sure, but don't lose it. I can't cope with that many colour green coloured tyres.
Can we have them a bit more like... we accidentally watched a bit of NASCAR recently.
Like and, you do?
Yeah.
Oops, I just turned it on for 4 days.
Don't know how that
and
happened.
And watched hundreds of laps.
And their radio, they were all like... Oh, I love you, man, and love you. They were talking to each other, and
yes,
so that was good.
That was, I think, unique to that race, and it may have been the first for NASCAR, but you did have drivers talking to their competitors over the radio whilst doing 200 miles an hour. It was fantastic. Yeah. I can't imagine a use for it in Formula One.
In that race, they were sort of buddying up. It was strange draft style racing. In Formula One, I think it would be much different. Can you imagine Alonso's radio to Petrov and things like that?
It would be good if drivers could complain to other drivers who are slowing them down in front of them, for example, and try and put them off. That could be fun if we could tune in. It'd
be interesting.
You could have them ridiculing them as they pass, you know, that kind of thing. And just going back to Chris's first point, I think the issue with Le Mans is Le Mans runs partly at night, and a lot of their lights are easy to see because it's dark, and you don't have that in Formula One.
Only in Singapore, then. Just one race.
One of the 20.
One race, you'll know what's going on. The rest, never mind.
Good luck.
And lastly, I only really want to put this in because we've already covered the topic, really. I'm putting it in because it's from Doc Brown.
The Doc Brown.
Well, I think it must be because the email address... The email address has some BTTF stuff in it as well, so I'm really impressed. He said, good evening. Are you going to do any more mini side pod chats as you did in 2010 with a few people? They were very fun to listen to. Thanks, Doc Brown.
Well, there you go.
You'd think he could just travel back and forth in time and find out, but maybe you should tell us. Are we going to?
I've been forward. Well, that's spooky that we did. I didn't know about this.
Nope.
It was an email. I didn't know about this email before we decided to do a side pod chat. We did it purely because we were making sure that we got Skype working again and we could take voicemails and we could communicate with people. So that's kind of weird. Maybe he did go forward and maybe subliminally hinting to us that we should be doing more side pod chats. But I liked what we did. And so, yes, we will be doing more. Hopefully many, many more. But we are going to need an awful lot of volunteers. If you assume that we use four callers per show, we can do as many shows as you like, so long as people call in and take part. That's the catch.
We love all the people that take part, but then if you have the same four people all the time, that's not much of a round table. It's just a podcast. Really.
Yes, they just become show regulars. You can have some, you know, we will absolutely have the same people on again because they're all fantastic. We want to mix it up a bit.
Yeah.
For, you know, to get a bit of variety. And so therefore we need volunteers. So if you're interested in being on, say, if you know, Doc Brown.
Yeah.
And you know, and you like them so much you wouldn't mind coming on there, drop us a line in the comments and we'll see if we can schedule a future show.
Housekeeping.
Tune.
Yeah.
Why are you playing that tune?
Oh, well, it's brilliant, isn't it?
Well, thank you to, was it College Humor who did that?
Yeah, I think so.
Great song. Love it. That's going to be in your head for the rest of the day.
It does get stuck in there. So, you remember we talked about last time the fact that another F1 podcast, the name of the show, they talked about us and they weren't very nice to us. So we just responded in kind, really, and said, don't be mean to us. In their latest podcast, they basically took back everything they ever said. This is the best flame war ever.
You mean worst?
Yeah, by best I mean most British. Because it's like, in their show, they said he just had this idea that he wanted to start a flame war with a podcast, which is brilliant. You know, why not?
Fine. Great way just to
He selected us, which I'm very flattered by, and was mean to us. And then listened to our response and actually felt really guilty. So in their show, they're basically just apologising for 10 minutes. I'm really sorry. We didn't mean to upset anyone.
Can you play a bit of it?
I can only play a tiny bit of it because there's quite a lot of swearing.
I think I'm like that. You know in a film where they go, you're not being like this because you're jealous. I think that's what it is.
You are jealous, don't you?
I think I'm jealous. They've got it all.
They've got it all. And they're not even, they don't give a f*** about iTunes. iTunes?
I don't care about iTunes comments. That's all I live for.
Yeah, yeah.
How many times a day do you check your iTunes comment?
Once or twice.
Exactly! So do I!
I love the concept of a very British flame war where everybody's too polite to offend anybody else.
Yeah.
It's also the longest and slowest flame war in internet history, I believe.
Yeah.
Given the fact that we have to record a podcast, edit it, put it out. They record a podcast, edit it, put it out. Then we have to listen to it. It's going to take a long time to have a flame war via podcast, I feel. However, I was thinking about this, the iTunes
How
comments.
Can we retaliate?
No, I wasn't thinking like that at all.
Yeah.
I loved listening to the whole of that podcast. If you haven't listened to it, there will be a link in the show notes. If you can handle strong language.
It's very sweary.
Yes, there are words in there you won't let me say in private, let alone on a podcast.
True enough. Words I have never even heard of before.
No, it is that strong, but I do recommend you listen to it because I was in stitches throughout the whole show and have been quoting lines from it for ever since. However, the subject of the iTunes comments, it struck a chord with me because when we started podcasting, iTunes was in about 8 countries.
Yeah.
So we used to have to check our comments in the UK iTunes store.
Yeah.
Then you had to log into the US iTunes store to see if there was any comments from anybody in America. So there was about eight different places our podcast was found in iTunes. And you had to log into everyone and they had to check it. And it was very slow. And I got very bored of it very quickly.
It's not easy to do because presumably Steve Jobs never thought you would be logging in and out of countries every day.
Well, there is that. I mean, it's very ill thought through. But that's a whole other argument. My real concern is if, such as the chaps from another F1 podcast, if like them, you are interested in your iTunes comments, and we said on the last podcast, do leave them a comment because they're checking them and they like them. Are they checking every single country in iTunes now? Because there are 90 different countries in iTunes now. 90
yeah.
different countries. They couldn't possibly be going through 90 different countries. It would take forever. How could you do that?
He said he checked it 2 or 3 times a day. I mean, it's worth it.
Here is my challenge then. If you're listening to this podcast and you like another F1 podcast and you were thinking of leaving them a comment, you should definitely do that. But you should do it in a country where they may not check.
How long it takes them to find it.
See how long it takes
Peru or something.
It might take months.
Then it really will be. It will be the longest flame war ever.
I think that's what should be done. So I've given up with iTunes comments, but clearly, if other people haven't, you should definitely respond because obviously it does mean a lot. I mean, we know from getting comments on side podcasts that it is good to get feedback from somebody, from anybody.
Absolutely.
It's good to get a retweet. It's good to get a Facebook like. All those things. I mean, you know, that's the modern equivalent, I think, of the iTunes. The iTunes comments is a Facebook like, but something along those lines. Always remember to like the podcast that you listen to that you genuinely do like, because we do this for free. Another F1 podcast, they do that for free. Nobody gets paid to do any of this stuff. We're all crazy. We're all completely loopy for doing this for nothing. And feedback is vital. And talking of which, we have a contact form. Where will people find that?
You would find that on sidepodcast.com/about.
There you go. Do another F1 podcast have a contact form?
Well, I think that's it for this show and all our really old news. I think we've caught everyone up to date.
Good Lord. Are we up to date today now? We bang up to date. Can we do another? If we did another podcast, say in an hour, could we do recent news?
I think we would be able to do recent news. Yeah.
Should we do another podcast in an hour?
It has been quite quiet, though. I mean, the last week since the Bahrain thing
settled,
it's been very quiet. So that's my excuse.
Fair enough.
We will be back with another podcast at some point, although we're having some redecorating issues.
Well, you've got a paintbrush.
Yeah.
Is that what you call a redecorating issue?
I'm going to be let loose with a paintbrush. That is an issue.
Okay. When we're done, then, we will be back.
Yes. Hopefully, it will be sooner than in 2 weeks if we're not busy digesting food like a snake.
We're going to eat a snake?
No. Isn't it snake?
That's a bit extreme for a podcast.
No. Don't snakes, eat a cow and then sit around for 2 months?
Oh, like a snake?
Yeah, like a snake.
You're going to consume food like a snake? You're not going to eat a snake?